Have you always been into music, like your whole life?
Yeah, kind of. When I was really little, I mean, I didn't play an instrument till I was like probably in seventh grade. I picked up guitar. Mm-hmm. I tried playing drums when I was a kid for like a year. I was learning drums on like a little kid set.
Yeah.
And I always kind of wanted to sing and do shit, but like I was never, I wasn't the best. I wasn't super natural at it, you know, but I had a little bit of ability when I was young, but it didn't take it serious till junior high.
Yeah. What about just being a fan of it?
When I was really young, I actually really liked a lot of like terrible music when I was little. Uh-huh. You know, like a lot of the like 90s like pop music, you know. Mm-hmm. Specifically too, like stuff like Lil Bow Wow, you know.
Sure.
Because I saw that it was other little kids making music or kids making music. So I was like, I was into that. And I even did like, I did a talent show in like the fifth grade.
Uh-huh.
And I lip synced a little Bow Wow song.
Yeah. That's sick though. Yeah. I mean, he's showing you can do it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Miles south, a hardcore punk rock podcast.
Yo, it's Color Boy, aka the kid born in space, aka the disabled disco innovator, aka so pop it, lock it, drop it, the instant classic generator. This is what I say.
This is Tony Cortez from No Repute. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
This is Ryan Control from Oxnard, California. RIP, Cola Boy.
This is Roger Camaro from Retaliate, The Warriors, and No Motive. Rest in peace to Matthew Arango, Cola Boy.
This is Brandon Cruz from Dr. No. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hey, this is Todd Jones from Nails. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hi, this is Daniel San from OMDB, and I just want to say rest in peace to Cola Boy.
Hey, it's Taylor Young, RIP Matt, a.k.a. Cola Boy. We miss him, and it's a tough loss. My condolences go out to Oxnard and all his friends and his family. To be a rich should be a crime.
Hey, this is Andrew Van Weingarten from the band MGMT. I wanted to say a few things about Matthew, a.k.a. Cola Boy. It's really sad that he's gone, and I really, really miss him and loved him like a brother. And I've been really smiling, thinking about all the great times we had together. When we took him out on tour in 2018, we got along like old friends from the start, and it was just kind of constant riffing on pop music and music. And it was always just laughter, laughs all the time. He was really great at impersonations, as all of his friends knew. And I won't forget his Arthur Russell impersonation in particular was my favorite. And after that tour, we collaborated a bunch. And every time we hung out, it was just very natural and easy, and always felt loved and kind of brotherly love. So sad to see him gone from this earth, but it's been nice to talk to all of his friends and family and celebrate his life and his music.
Hey, what's up? It's Alberto. I met Matt 15 years ago. I was 18 years old. I was playing in a band called Impulse. We went up to Ventura County to play a show, and Matt's band, El Mariachi, they were also playing the show. I first talked to Matt in the parking lot outside of the show, and we hit it off. It was easy. You know, you don't really create connections like that every day. You don't meet people like that every day where, you know, you just say what's up and bam, you know, it's topic after topic after topic after topic. And ever since then, either man and Marcus would come down to San Diego, or we would go up to Oxnard and we would hit each other up. you know, every time we went up to Oxnard, we would go to Toppers, we'd go to Wins, and we would hang out at Matt's house. I feel like we would tell ourselves, yeah, we're going to go play this show in Fresno or whatever it was. And it was just an excuse to have a chance to end up back in Oxnard and hang out with Matt and Marcus at their house. And, you know, eventually Matt ended up doing Cola Boy and he got popular. But no matter how popular he got, every time he came down to SD, he would reach out to us. And we would meet up and we would pick up where we left off. You know, Matt is someone you don't meet every day.
Yeah.
Down to earth, just a stand up guy. And a couple days ago, I realized I never got into an argument with him. I never beefed with him. Every time I saw him, nothing but good times. Just pure fun. Even if we were just like sitting at a taco shop talking, it was still fun. I could be like I could be depressed. I could be angry. But as soon as I saw Matt and Marcus, fun again, happy again. I know wherever Matt's at, he's doing great. Because that's the type of guy he is. You know, everywhere he went, he would make friends. He would create a community. And he would create laughs. I'm going to miss Matt a lot. You know, I love the guy. I love you, Matt. Love you, dude. Forever in my thoughts. And I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss you a lot. Cola Boy forever.
Hey, this is Dan from Downpressor Minus in Section 8. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hey, this is Joseph from Tsunami. Just want to say rest in peace, Matt. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hey, this is Blake from Stalag 13. Just want to pay my respects to Cola Boy. May you rest easy, my brother. You will be missed.
This is Chris Williams from Change, Village Hardcore, NWHC Radio, and 185 miles south. Sending a big rest easy to the kid born in space.
This is Andrew Verity from Vendetta and Retaliate. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
This is Andy from Ill Communication. R.I.P. Cola Boy.
What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are paying tribute to Matthew Urango, aka Cola Boy. Helping out, we got his brother, Marcus Urango. What's up, Marcus?
Hello, hello.
Also helping out, we got Ray Chavera. What's up, dude?
What's up, man?
What up, what up? And rounding us out, we got Vincent Amador from Dead Heat. What's up, Vince?
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
What is going on? Let's jump right into it. Marcus, you obviously grew up with him. You're his twin brother, correct?
Yeah. Same womb, 5 minutes apart.
Were you first or was he first?
So I was first, but very certain he should have been first. He had all the swag, all the maturity, all the, you know, kind of like the wiser one. But I was 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah. When did music like enter your life, like your family's life? What do you remember about music in your house?
Well, it's definitely a big influence. Our whole family, like, pulled music into us like really heavy. Like our grandma, which we didn't find out until later in life, was a lounge singer. On my dad's side, our black grandmother just touring around the country. She always had a piano in her house. My dad always had music. He was always into like whatever style was popping, and he had so much music like reggae. Matt was really big on Michael Jackson when he was little. Old school hip hop, which growing up in the 90s turned into like current hip hop. He definitely like got into dancing, and I remember early times of him with like getting into Lil Bow Wow, and you know, I think music has just, we always had such a wide variety thrown at us from a young age, from my parents, people at school, like some of our friends, we had like, they had rocker families. So it was just so much influence that, you know, at some point, like through all the music, and I think even at one time him doing like a lip syncing dance show at a talent show. And one day, one of our best friends, Kaylee Gish, got him into punk and started, you know, tempting him over to the dark side. And
hi, this is Kaylee from Oxnard. I've known Matt since we were 12 or 13 years old. We met in eighth grade English class. I can still remember the day that I introduced him to the Ramones, which opened the doors to his love of punk music. I never thought that was very important, but Matt liked to share that story every time he introduced me to new people. To me, Matt was a rebel youth, and I had no doubt that he would have found punk music on his own. He was always the funniest guy in the room. In school, he'd piss off our teachers because he'd be disrupting the class, and the teachers would be right there cracking up too, not able to help themselves. We were both class clowns, and so we fueled each other's fires. The teachers would yell at us and tell us to finish our work, and Matt would always snap back that he had long since finished the assignment. I remember being stunned. I remember looking down at my own blank paper. I had never even seen Matt pick up the pencil. Matt was always out there getting shit done.
Well, I guess I was already introduced to punk without really knowing before from like the Tony Hawk video games and stuff.
Sure.
Course, like classic.
Yeah.
And but in eighth grade, a friend of mine named Kaylee Gish, she showed me like the Ramones,
uh-huh,
and the Sex Pistols, I think.
Yeah,
the two, like, you know, of course, like from the start, like standard punk stuff. Like, she showed me that, and the Ramones specifically, like, that was like, I don't know, it really got me. It was like an anthology, or like Loud Fast Ramones. It's like a compilation of, okay, all their songs.
Yeah.
Like their hits.
Yeah.
And that, from there on, I was like, yo, this is the shit right here.
Pretty soon he was playing the Ramones every single day, just nonstop. And I don't think I've actually ever been able to really get into them because of that. But he was all that. And then once he got into Nardcore, oh, it was off to the races. He was just... Yeah, and I think around then is probably when he, like, when we started meeting Vince and Ray, and we started, I don't know, a lot of people in our junior high years. What year? Maybe 2003, 2002 is like when people really, like, a lot of us really started jumping into the scene.
Ray, what do you remember about when you met Cola Boy the first time?
The first time I met Matt, it was at a birthday party for our mutual friend Casey. And all I saw was this kid with the Ramones shirt on with the biggest afro you've ever seen. And me and him just started, we meshed right away because we were both super into the Ramones when we were both like 12 or 13. And like Marcus said, like Michael Jackson and stuff too, we started talking all kinds about music that day, and we just became brothers right after that.
Vince, what do you remember about meeting Cola Boy in junior high?
So I met Matt around... like probably the seventh grade also. So we're all getting into punk around the same time. I believe I had PE with Matt. I'm trying to remember exactly, but we didn't really become friends till the eighth grade. And it was because I believe it was school picture day where Matt wore a Ramone shirt. Am I remembering this correctly? He wore it in his eighth grade photo. Okay. So at the county fair, they would have this stand that sold like random like metal and punk shirts. I remember I bought an Exploited shirt, the Punk's Not Dead shirt, and I wore it to, yes, picture day on the eighth grade. And Matt wore a Ramone shirt, and we were just like, I remember talking to him, and I remember he called me like a poser for wearing a Punk's Not Dead shirt. And then like we've just been friends ever since. And like that's how we discovered we were both, you know, like having our parents drop us off to punk shows and all that stuff. So that, I remember him calling me a poser in the eighth grade for that. And I don't know, I've just known him ever since. It was funny because after Fremont, half of us went to OHS and the other half went to Pacifica, and I was on the OHS side. So I would only see Matt at punk shows that we would go to. So like Ray and Marcus were, you know, saw the full evolution of Matt, you know, getting more and more into punk, into nardcore and all that stuff. But I would only see him at the shows he would end up at.
Marcus, let's talk about some of the early shows you went to with Matthew. And, you know, Kaylee brought him to the dark side, but where does this evolve in high school? Where does your musical journey go and where does his musical journey go?
Yeah, his started, you know, probably maybe like months, maybe a little less than a year before it finally like broke me in there too. He got convinced me to go see Ill Repute, California Redemption, and I think Total Resistance at the Livery before that got shut down. And I remember a friend of ours just like pushed me into the pit and I never left the whole show. And I remember afterwards Matt too just being like, I told you, dude, I told you. Like he just knew, like he knew it would be a part of my life, like it was his just going forward. And I think his might have been a backyard show. I can't remember who. I remember his biggest show that he was most pumped on was like a, it was a, they had a, like a Battle of the Bands at Oxnard High School that like, I think Vince's band Take Your Best Shot and some other bands played back then. And I remember him coming back and just being so pumped and excited. And yeah, and just, I don't know, just so many, a lot of shows. And there's definitely like a lot of specific people I remember that saw me and Matt as like, and some of our friends as young kids at the show and took the time to actually be like, oh, well, this is what happens. This is us here. Like, look out for us. And people, a lot of different people that, you know, really helped Matt out too and kind of really gave him like a whole new family to have.
When did he start creating music? When did he do his first band?
I know he had been playing guitar for a long time, but in terms of like punk and stuff like that, I recorded his first band called Full Blown AIDS. In like, yeah, or later called FBA. Like they're just like, yeah, we're not Full Blown AIDS, or now we're FBA. Boner ended up playing in that band, but the first iteration of the band was Matt on guitar, and it was songs he had written. And this is maybe like summer of 07. I remember Christmas of 06, I got this weird like mixer thing, and I just started like messing around with the recording bands. And Matt was, he had this band, and he came over to my parents' house and recorded this demo in the garage. And that's as far as I remember his first like output or thing he had released. I can't speak to if he had been making anything before, but the first thing recording released that I'm aware of is this hardcore like power violence band called FBA or Full Blown AIDS.
What do you remember about that session? What were the songs like, and how well put together was it?
Oh, it was I didn't know what the hell I was doing, so it was like kind of put a mic in the room type stuff, and the songs were pretty well put together. There's this drummer, his name was Juan, and I believe he had like a practice space in his parents' garage, and they played the songs like a bunch of times. So when it came time to recording, it wasn't too crazy. I do remember there was this one thing though, that there's this like breakdown in the middle of a song, and the bassist at the time, this dude named Crispin, he came in like a beat early, and it was an accident, but it ended up sounding cool, so we just ran with it and kept that take. And it's one of those like happy accidents. I was like, oh yeah, that was completely wrong, but it was cool, so let's keep it. And we did it all in like 3 hours or something like that. And then yeah,
Ray, were you a fan of Full Blown AIDS?
Yeah, I was a big fan of Full Blown AIDS, so much so that Matt asked me to play second guitar right after they released that demo.
Sick. What was that band like? What did you guys do? And you play around Nard, or what was going on with it?
Yeah, we played locally mostly. I played guitar, Matt played guitar, our friend Crispin played bass, and Juan played drums. We played locally a lot, mostly, and we played one gig with Phobia somehow. I don't remember how that came to be, but we played in Somis with Phobia, and we were like 16 years old, like had no business playing with them, but they were like the nicest guys to us, and felt like we were doing something right.
Any other memories of being in that band with Matthew?
Yeah, I should have saved that Phobia story, because that was probably the coolest thing that we did. I don't know. We played a lot of shows. I have a folder full of flyers on my computer of all the shows we had played. And I always see that one. It's just this big Phobia, the Phobia logo on the very top. And I'm like, how did this even happen? Because we were just like 16, 17 years old, just playing local shows in Oxnard and Wainimi. And then all of a sudden we had this show with so many people coming out. We played first, but it was still so much fun.
Yeah. Marcus, how did you like that band? And did your family get a whiff of Matthew being in a band called Full Blown AIDS.
I mean, it goes without saying that my mom was not a fan of the band name, and there's another title they were going to go with. I won't say out loud, but it could have been worse and more hilarious at the same time. But they weren't a fan, but they were super pumped on Matt. Like, you know, he was in a guitar class with Ray for a good while in high school, and they always all had like a lot of fun in there, and a lot of musicians that would also be in other bands and do other things. And yeah, and then he just kind of like out of nowhere just shows up, and he's like, yeah, I'm starting this band with Juan. And it was just a 2-piece at first, and it was just awesome and rad, like short, just powerful songs, but those breakdowns were like just so sick and ridiculous. And I remember they had one song called The Ballad of Robert Pena that was about a friend of ours and about a lot of the antics in his life. And it was a song of love. It was a song of how ridiculous and awesome this guy is and how you need to know everything about him. At least, like, that was the point of the song. But then people, I don't know, thought it was like a hateful, angry song. So that people would be yelling, like, F Robert Pena. Like, at sets, and Matt would be like, hey, no, yeah, no, we love that dude. Nah, like, but it was just cool. And then I remember I had a van for the first time, and that instantly became the AIDS Mobile. And my mom didn't trust me to drive to super long shows, so I remember Ray would have to drive those for a couple of them.
Yeah, so much of what makes like the Coloboy project special is that, you know, he cranked out these songs that were like infectious and very nice on the ear, but so much of the message could also be political. When do like politics start infiltrating his life, and when does he start carving out a political identity?
I think to an extent it's always been in him. Like, we started learning, I don't know, we learned later in life interesting things about like members of our family that passed away like long before we were born, or we never got to meet, that we're in Matt found out like in the last year that my grandma had a twin sister who was a communist, who was like working with like children. Like, she has a picture of two, like a black and a white baby right next to her, and she looks all happy and is like this super white lady nurse in like the 1940s, 50s. And I think it just kind of always crept in, and punk was the main opener for that. Like, you know, Rim Trip Peni was one of his biggest influences for his like drawing and for his music, that especially that song Pig in a Blanket, like hit him hard and turned him vegetarian for like 4.5 years. But definitely like punk, like, you know, he'd listen to lyrics, he'd listen to songs, and he'd be like, well, what are they talking about? What's going on? And we also just started at that time having way too much access to the internet, and, you know, we're allowed to research things for ourselves, and we're in a community that's, you know, much more allowing of free thinking and getting you to question everything around. And
Vince, what was his next band, El Mariachi? Did you record them as well?
I did not record El Mariachi. That was recorded with Kenji at the Kenji Shack. Legendary.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shout out Kenji.
Yeah, what's shout up? Out Kenji, the goat. But yeah, that was
yeah.
I believe that was his next band. And that was probably my favorite punk stuff he's ever done. Like, the March stuff, like, I've been just digging through and trying to find like tapes that exist in the wild, and finally getting it all together. It's just stuff I like remember hearing, but it's never been like digitized or anything like that, and it's 100% my favorite stuff that Matt's ever done, like in the punk world.
It's just on cassette right now, but you're digitizing it?
Yeah, there's like three tapes. There's two that are recorded at Kenji's, and then I think one that Adrian did. I'm trying to remember who did them, but I have all three of them now, and they're so good.
Ray, what's your take on El Mariachi?
I was a big fan of that band because we were really big into Power Violence at that time. And me, Vince, Stu, and Mikey had a band called X Malcolm X that was playing shows at the same time. So we were always the two of our bands were always on the same bill, and it was a lot of fun to play with them.
Definitely give a shout out and a rest in peace to Nick Ulmer, because Nick Ulmer and El Mariachi, like Matt and him getting to get together to write songs was amazing. And it's took like what was already another awesome 2-piece Matt had started, and also gave Matt the freedom to have a guitarist as talented as he was, and then gave him the ability. And not only that, like, he was nervous. He's a disabled kid stepping onto the stage and not just playing like regular anything music, like screaming high pitched, and like his style, like he was just seizuring on stage in the most natural, cool way. He just owned it. Like, from the start, it was just, you know, I always thought, like, oh, I want to do it and stuff. But I was like, oh, okay, I can't do that. It was a lot of kind of what you'd later see in Cola Boy, the way he could just move around a stage, shove a mic into somebody's mouth, like, all that kind of stuff came from him writing awesome songs from El Mariachi, but just specifically being like, I want to be in the front. I want people to look at me while I'm screaming my ass off. And it was just still like, people to this day are like, dude, El Mariachi. Like, people, you know, within the last months or year, I've heard people be like, when's El Mariachi going to play? And, you know, people don't forget some bands that just come and impact you like El Mariachi did.
And you were saying an important thing about that band was it was him getting his confidence. Do you want to elaborate on that a little more?
Yeah, because, like, being able to, like, stand in front of a crowd, like, I don't think El Mariachi even did super crazy shows, but they definitely played to, like, a couple hundred people or more sometimes. And if you've never done that before, that's a lot. Like, I've been on stage and I, like, wear masks or sunglasses to hide myself. I do anything I can to get away with it. Matt was just, like, literally, like, in your face. If he ever had a ski mask on, it was because it looked super fly on him. But just, I don't know, that charisma he had and, like, the courage and stuff. You know, I'm sure everyone's throwing the word courage around and stuff like that. But, like, dude was flying off the stage, front flipping people. Like, you'd see him throw a drop kick every once in a while. There's a lot of really cool YouTube videos. Good luck looking up El Mariachi Oxnard without looking at the actual mariachi bands, but there's a lot of really great footage and stuff of El Mariachi just rocking the house and people just losing it.
Yeah, El Mariachi was special. It was a time where in Oxnard all our venues just were non-existent. Like, it lived in the backyards. It, you know, like, every once in a while there would be something at the lab, then the lab got shut down. So this, like, era of Matt doing El Mariachi was during, like, what I would consider, like, a lull in Oxnard hardcore. Like, you know, there were very few bands doing things around here, and no one, like, show attendance was kind of poor, but they were still just rocking it. And they were, like, around the same time as when Sea Lions really was doing a lot of stuff too, but it was a completely different scene.
Yeah, so after El Mariachi, he transitions into playing in an indie rock band called the Sea Lions. What was that like?
Yeah, so Matt was liking punk and went around, and he met a good friend of ours and, you know, huge influence on him and peer as far as music goes, Adrian Pallotto from Sea Lions, who I think it was just him and some other guy. And he liked Matt. He liked Matt's style. Matt was able to just walk up to people at a show and just talk to them, like, with no problem. And he was in some weird bands, like one called Genital Herpes, so keeping the theme alive. You can see how they end up becoming, like, best friends. And it was, like, this weird, like, psychedelic, circusy punk music. It was ridiculous. And he was just out of nowhere, just like, hey, Matt, do you want to come play guitar? And Matt, I'm probably mixing up how exactly it happened, but Adrian brought Matt on, and Matt played Sea Lions for years, maybe a decade or more. I came in, like, there's so many members came and went. Like, you can look at so many different pictures, like a who's who of who played in that band. But then Adrian and Matt were, like, always, like, the constant and stuff like that. Like, they pushed each other and really kind of jumped into that. And Sea Lions started to grow to, like, a 5-6-piece band. And Matt was always there getting to tour around the country, spent a long time actually going to LA for shows, realizing, you know, if you really want to get out there and get your music out there, you do have to kind of go to where the people are.
Yeah, the LP comes out in 2011, and you were saying that one of the important things about him playing in this band was it gave him a taste of touring and seeing the world.
Yeah, we got to, he got to go to Japan. I'm pretty sure they did stuff in Mexico, up in Canada, all over the country, and ended up finding a whole second home on the East Coast with, like, a bunch of artists that almost became, like, the perfect kind of family of protectors and supporters of Matt, like, throughout his career as well.
Can you go into that a little more?
Yeah, so we met, I think it started with their Sea Lions played, and we were cool with this band called The Beats with some good friends of ours, Juan Waters, and they met a bunch of people through there, that Matt Voles and Chie and some people, Tal Juan and Mac DeMarco, and met a bunch of people that were already like hitting it big or just equally as just, I don't know, hungry to chase the dream of music. Like he met people on the East Coast from Uruguay and Argentina, like from China. Like he was just, you know, in the one of those places like New York can be where he's just has all this influence around, and he was trucking it around, like subwaying it everywhere, just taking over that whole freaking state.
Ray, what was your experience with Colo Boy and this era of him doing the Sea Lions?
Yeah, it was really cool to see him do something else outside of punk, because we had always been into hardcore and punk throughout high school. And that's how we knew Adrian, who Marcus brought up, played in a lot of punk bands, I guess you'd call them. He played in another band. Was it Butt Savage?
Butt Savage. Yeah.
Butt Savage. And we were friends with Adrian. You know, we knew him in high school. He's a year or two older than us. But yeah, so we were very aware of Adrian. And Adrian started Sea Lions. And we were, you know, we were super supportive of his project with that. And when Matt joined, it like just really took off. And they meshed super well together. And yeah, we're all super proud to see them tour and experience like a lot of what Marcus said, just see the world and meet a bunch of people. And yeah, it was cool to witness.
Vince, what's your take on this era?
Around this time, I was starting to do a band that wasn't a hardcore band. Also, we're like a indie band, but not, it was so weird. There was so many like kind of weird divisions of what or whatever indie is. And Sea Lions and my band Sooners actually played maybe two or three shows together, never like on a tour or anything, just kind of like shows that one-off shows that end up with both our bands on it. And it was cool because at that time, you know, me and Matt remained friends, you know, the whole time. And we both had different experiences of, you know, playing in a world that wasn't punk or hardcore anymore, you know, like, and we both had, you know, like very positive experiences with this, but you know, it all just came circled back to getting into the shit because of punk. And, you know, like, even like Sea Lions, I like, they're like not musically a punk band, but I always consider them to be very punk, if that makes any sense. Like everything they did was always super punk and I thought it was awesome. And I think that really spoke to like how like Matt's origin story is rooted in punk and the punk ethos and just making sure that, you know, he doesn't stray too far away from that, no matter what he does creatively.
Marcus, can you talk about like the, like how Colo Boy, the project, blossomed?
Well, yeah, he was, I mean, Adrian from Sea Lions is the, one of those people, I'm sure you've met him, that can pick up like any, almost any instrument and just figure it out. And writing songs, like he just, you know, he had a knack for it. And Matt, you know, got to learn a lot from that. And I think there's like different Sea Lion songs he like contributed to. And I think, well, there's one, I forget which one that he had like helped, he like wrote that they used. But Matt, he was just really kind of wanting to like do his own thing. He really wanted to kind of, you know, make his own music. He had this, his own, you know, Colo Boy style that was like really just ready to erupt in there. And he loved playing with other people. He loved collaborating. But it was like, you know, I think when he finally took that step to like be like, I'm going to focus on my stuff, and we parted ways for a bit, came back and played Sea Lions a lot, probably throughout the years off and on and stuff. And especially Adrian coming back and playing with Colo Boy full circle, but started off with him going by Vox Disco. And he had some just really just great sounding, just sweet, borderline, like, I, you know, it's weird listening to your brother's songs and thinking like, hey, man, this is sexy. But you'd be driving and just be like, okay, like he's setting the mood right now. This is okay. And then before long, Colo Boy was a nickname given to him by some of those East Coast dudes. They'd always be like, hey, Cola, like, dude loves soda, that I'm sure everyone realizes now. But eventually he realized like that's just going to be a way harder name than Vox Disco, and Colo Boy became Colo Boy.
There were some shows happening in New York that I jumped on and it was like, oh, what are we going to put my name as on the flyer?
Yeah.
And they were like, yo, you got to be Colo Boy. Him and my other homie Matt Voles, they were like, yo, you're Colo Boy. And I was like, I don't know, like, because there's another band called Colo Boy as well, you know, from like the 90s. We had like one EP.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know. There's already a band named Colo Boy. They're like, who gives a fuck? Like,
let's just add a Y.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, And I was like, I don't know. I think I'm just going to go by my real name, Matthew. Matthew Urando. Just go by my full name. And they're like, that's whack. And they, like, without even my choice, they put my name as Cola Boy on the flyer.
Yeah, that's nice.
And then so I was like, all right, fuck it. And then from then on, like, they started introducing me to people as Cola Boy. And then it just became my name.
Ray, what was your take on some of the early demos? How did you feel about the songs?
I absolutely love those songs with the Vox Disco. The way me and Matt became such good friends in the beginning when we were 12 or 13 is first our love for the Ramones and secondly our love for Michael Jackson. So we would always, you know, sit in his room when we were kids and listen to all Michael Jackson's records and just nerd out over them. And so when he had shown me these songs, he had sent them in an email, I think, to me, and I was like, dude, this kind of sounds like off the wall Michael Jackson. And he's like, dude, fuck yeah, that's what I'm kind of going for, you know, that disco vibe, you know. And I was like, dude, this is sick. And I was super supportive of it, and I knew that he knew I would love it because we both had talked about Off the Wall, that record, for years. We would just sit and listen to it in his room or my room when we were kids. So when he released or was showing me demos and stuff that he was working on, I was 100% supportive and super proud that he was pursuing that, to go from hardcore punk to indie and now disco. You know, it was super cool to just witness the musical genius that Matt was.
But I think there was a point where I just wanted to make like funky music, you know, like disco-y or like 70s pop type stuff. But I couldn't, because I didn't have the like knowledge of like strong structural chords or like musician instrument, like ability as like a musician. I didn't really, or the production quality or anything, or production know-how or anything.
Sure.
So I was just trying to do just like, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to fucking do it. But with the main focus being whatever the song sounds like production wise, at the core of it is like, I want to write a really good song each time. Cause that's how I feel. I feel like no matter what the production is like on a song, if it sounds like shit or if like it's like gold production, like dope shit, it doesn't matter if the song at the core of it is like a good song.
Yeah.
Vince, what's your take on that, the Cola Boy demo era?
I had known Matt was making music, like, because we both talked about Audacity. It's this free DAW that you get on, like, on Google, and that we were both making music on Audacity, which is like, it's like making, it's working under like a work handicap. Like it works against you in every possible way to try to, when you're making music. And
Vince, let's not talk too much shit on Audacity because I still use it. So,
oh God. Well, I'm not shitting on Audacity. I truly believe
just
that.
Tread lightly, okay?
Okay,
please.
But we would talk about Audacity, and I think it was Penny Girl. I was like, because that was one of the first Vox Disco songs, and I was like, oh, whoa, what the hell? You made this on Audacity? And then, not long after that, our friend Roman had a birthday party, and he lived in El Rio, and they would have like bands play or whatever. And I remember Matt played this party as Vox Disco. Am I remembering that correctly? Okay. So it was like the first time I'd ever seen Matt play live that wasn't like a solo set. And I think Adrian was playing drums along with like an iPod or something. Well, either way, it was Matt singing with a microphone and like, you know, no big band backing, and he rocked the party. It was awesome. I remember it was completely light out. It wasn't dark or anything in this backyard in El Rio. And I was like, oh, wow, there's something special here. And then, you know, lo and behold, the next 3 years was him calling himself Cola Boy eventually and then playing more and more shows locally. Then, you know, like Fest. I remember he played like Viva Pomona. And it just kind of started to snowball from there. And then he became the Cola Boy that we know now.
Yeah, Marcus, talk about how it started catching on, like not only locally, but when he started having an impact outside of Ventura County.
I think growing up, we always kind of knew something was going to pop off with him. He was just always had his finger in something. There was always some kind of thing going on. So when he just started kind of getting shows and, you know, started touring more and people were like just really receptive. We had some friends, some of his earliest fans, shout out to Mario. Rocked and jammed to Penny Girl nonstop the entire drive to San Diego from Oxnard on repeat. Things like that, where it's like you just start getting these notions that you're like, okay, like, yeah, that song's a banger, I love it. But then it's not until you, like, you know, he makes all these great songs, but then you go see Penny Girl live and you see people start just stomping their feet to it, dancing and just losing it. Like, it's one of those moments where it's like, that's when it all kind of rushed and you get all these memories from our lives where I'm like, oh, he's magic, or oh man, like, damn, my brother's freaking cool. Like, I can't let people know that I'm not the cool brother because he's just so freaking badass. And then, yeah, and then just some of those shows, those concerts, just seeing it just get, you know, better and better, seeing him just get more on it, have a full band backing him, or some of the ideas he'd come up with for, like, just fun shows to do. His style just started just blowing up. It was just, like, little things, but then he was always, I was always so ready to, if I had to, like, humble him, bring him back down to his level. It's like, you're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna get too big for your britches. But he never did, like, not once. And he just kept just climbing almost.
The first 12-inch came out in 2018, the Black Boogie Nation. And one of the things that's so cool about Cola Boy is, like, he leaned into, like, the way he looks, right? Like, making that cartoon character on the front. Like, he never, like, shied away from it. He's like, this is who I am, and, like, put it out there. Like, can you talk about that? If he ever had any, like, reservations about doing that, or if he was always, like, just 100% gung-ho?
I think when we were younger, he definitely had a lot of those times of, you know, being worried about what people thought of him and keeping certain things hidden. But it's like, at that point in his career, it was just like, he knew that it was like, you know, those are the artists people remember too, is the ones that put it all in their sleeve and just let it all out. And I think he just never batted an eye. Like, one of his album covers has, like, one of his prosthetic legs, like, in the back cover. Like, it's, he was just, like, ready for it. Like, you know, he's open to, you know, letting himself be seen, like, shirtless. Things that it's like, you know, when you, things that it's like, when you look at him, you're like, oh, okay, like, you really see what he's dealt with his entire life, and that's a huge part of his music and everything like that. I don't think there was ever, like, a thought in his mind that he wouldn't do that.
That's true. The prosthetic leg is on the back of the LP, but it is next to two guns, so it's pretty hard.
I found a picture of it. Yeah, one of Matt Vole's, the homie from the East Coast, just sent me a picture too. He's like, oh, hey, here's a picture of your brother, looks tight. And he's just pointing a gun at the camera. And I'm like, yeah, he looks so hard. Like,
for sure. Ray, let's talk about when the record comes out in 2018. What was that like? And, you know, because now it's like a project fully realized. You know, it's him as a solo artist. It's him on a 12-inch. That's so sick, dude. How was it received, and how did you like it, and how proud of him were you as an old-time friend?
Yeah, extremely proud of Matt. He's a machine, man. He was cranking out songs, you know, left and right back then. So it was cool to see something that was solely him outside of a band project to give a bunch of his time to, and work really hard at doing this. This, what Marcus said, like, his image of embracing his disabilities and stuff. Cause back when we first met, it was for sure a big insecurity of his. And we had talked about stuff like that back in the day. So for him to have this project and for him to embrace all those things that he was insecure about back in the day, it was super, you know, almost gets me choked up just talking about it, just cause you got to witness how far he'd come with all his music, especially, and to just embrace all those things. And to say I'm proud is an understatement, man. So, yeah, we were all super proud. Oxnard was super proud of him and all of our homies.
Vince, what's your take on the first 12-inch?
Oh, I love it. I was also very excited and proud that song from Oxnard was put on vinyl. Like, that was, like, when the Sea Lions LP came out, I was like, hell yeah. Like, you know, it's something from Oxnard that's on wax. And then Matt's, you know, record coming out on wax was like the next thing. I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, we're on the map. Let's go. But, like, the whole record is awesome. Matt would do this thing where whenever he would, like, write a demo or whatever, he would come and just show everyone, like, you know, like, how the songs evolve. And when I finally heard the LP, it was like these finalized versions of these songs I had been hearing for like 2-3 years. And it was really, really special because, like, the version of Penny Girl that's on there is completely different than like its original version. Like Beige 70 is like a completely different song, but now it's like, this is the final version of it. You know, this is immortalized on wax, you know? And it was really cool just being able to see that, that evolution of his work and it be like a final product, you know?
Marcus, can you talk about him spending so much? He's on a French label and he starts spending a lot of time in France going over a few times a year. Did you ever go with him?
Never got the chance to, sadly, but definitely going to go sometime in the future and, you know, kind of go and kind of hopefully have that kind of feeling that's like almost kind of like him taking me there. But just, I don't know, it's just so amazing. He'd be sending me pictures, like they get him a flat, be taking him around, like talk of the town, like, you know, and like people would be like showing up, all these fancy French people to come watch him perform. And he was just out there like living it. And the only thing that really kind of like stopped that from being like a constant was his health, and traveling really, really took a lot out of him, the altitude and stuff on his lungs. But I remember when he got signed to that and he was just so pumped because he knew how much I loved the movie Drive. And Kavinsky is on that soundtrack, and is part of their label. And he was just like, dude, guess what you've been writing to for a whole year? And guess who I'm on the same label as? And it was just like, oh, damn, it was just so cool. And then, you know, got to meet them and like nice dudes. And anytime, you know, your brother's in a foreign place on the other side of the world, you worry. And like, he was definitely well looked after. And it was just, I don't know, like, definitely crazy when I got to like walk around and tell people like my brother's on a French label, like he's in France right now. And it's just, you know, like people, you see him posting stuff like, oh, hey, you know, this is, look at this cute bird or something like that. And Matt's every day got some fancy, like crazy party, or he's at the Louvre or wherever he's at. And it's, you know, watching, especially someone from Oxnard, but your brother who, you know, you watched fight and have to really like kick ass to get where he'd gotten, to just be just really conquering the whole world at that point. It was just, you know, Cola Boy worldwide.
This past November, I play in a band called Strike Fast. And we got to play a benefit for a Palestine show in, yeah, November. And, you know, we have a spot in Oxnard called the CFF that we play a lot of shows at. And it was cool to have a mixed bill of Strike Fast, who's like a hardcore punk band, and Cola Boy on the same bill. And it was cool when we all got there and started doing sound check, and Matt was showing us new songs in the CFF. So this song called Fly, he was playing for us while doing sound check, and we were checking all the monitors and the mics and stuff. And I was just like, dude, what is this? And he's like, oh, it's some new song I'm working on, or some song that's going to be on the new record. And that hook, the melody in that song just like has been stuck in my head since then. And I'm looking forward to so many people hearing the new record, because he had some crazy stuff cooking up, and or it's finished. But, you know, just I was so blown away by a song that he wrote and worked on that he played it for me. And I was like, wow, this is really good. I can't wait for everyone else to hear this.
Yeah. And we should just say, record makers, you got till August. Otherwise, I'm going to bootleg that shit. So what's up? Vince, what do you got on the Cola Boy project?
Piggybacking off what Ray said, Matt was really proud of what Cola Boy was in the project. And I noticed because, so we have a little lockout that's down the street from Matt Marcus's parents' house, right here in Northside Oxnard. And Matt would be here all the time. And he's been writing this record that's supposed to come out for like the last 3 years. And he would come by the studio all the time with like small, like different bounces of new revisions that he'd work with whoever he's working the songs with. And he would just show me and show all of us and be like, oh yeah, like this is a, we changed like the chorus here. We did, I mean, we added shakers here, just, you know, all the small little updates they made to the songs. And I know that he really cared about Cola Boy, and it was like his baby, and he was so proud of it. And so he came over here maybe like a week before he passed. And he was like, hey, I have masters of my new record. Can we listen in just so I can give any notes back to, you know, the mastering engineer if we need to change anything? And we listened, and I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then I just like kind of sat in it. And then he was like, yeah, if you have any notes, you know, send them my way. And I didn't have any notes. It was great. And I can't wait for it to come out in whatever way it does. That song Fly that Ray's talking about is like, that's in the Mount Rushmore of Cola Boy tracks now.
Yeah. You know, Matt made friends in, if you think about it, like in three different genres of music, with like the punk stuff and then the indie stuff and then doing the disco and the dance stuff, and friends in multiple cities and really in multiple countries. Like, Marcus, can you talk about the impact that, you know, you think he had on everyone, and then also to you personally as your brother?
Yeah. I already feel it coming in. I was hoping I can keep it together. Shows are just like, it's so hard to think of just one memory when we've been going to shows together since we were 16 years old. Like, we're, you know, 34 and, you know, going freaking strong. And just, there's just so many to count. There's him showing up in a banana suit, like at a Dog End show, and stage diving, or taking Boogie Board to Retaliate Sound and Fury. Like, he was just like always in all kinds of different shows, and then punk shows. He'd be in the backyard just going nuts, or you'd see him flying at a stage, like at the Alpine, or for like Casualties or something. And he had just this way of just bringing all these people together, and like, no show's really ever going to be the same. It's not, you know, like, being there with him was just such a different vibe. Like, everyone wanted to talk to him. Like, it'd just be like, you know, he's like one of those pillars at a show that people are just always, it's the same with our family. We'd have family events and there'd be the most hilarious, like, elder of the family, and then there'd be Matt on one other end, and usually cycling from both. And in this last, like, few years, too, he got really, really hard back into the local hardcore and punk scene, and he's just been so diehard with it. He was at every show just raging, so supportive of all of his friends' bands. And, you know, when you saw Matt just, like, shaking his fist, like, screaming along, you really felt like you were just doing everything right in the universe. And, you know, it's never going to be the same at a show again, but, yeah.
Yeah, Ray, How about that? Talk about his impact on everyone in the area, and then also on you personally.
Yeah, Matt, right away, me and Matt meshed well together. Like I said, with the Ramones, we were 12, 13 years old with our Ramone shirts, and we're both learning how to play guitar. And you always remember the first people you like jammed with when you're first learning an instrument, and you're first getting into something you really like. And my mom would just drop me off with my little like crate combo amp and my Epiphone SG, and just me and Matt would just play Ramone songs together in the garage. And it just blossomed into this you know, lifelong friendship. And he always, you know, pushed me to be better and play guitar. Even when we had Football and AIDS, we played together, and then when we did other projects, he was always proud of what I was doing, and I was always proud of him. And he had just a big influence on me, not just musically, but he was not just a great musician, he was also a great friend. And he checked in on you and was good with your family. And yeah, just he changed my life so much, and I'm so grateful to have known him for so long, 20 years maybe a little bit more than 20 years that we were friends. And yeah, I'm just so grateful that our lives crossed paths and our lives went the way it did.
Vince, how about you? His impact in the area, and then also personal impact on you.
So for Matt's impact in the area, the city's not going to be the same without him. You know, he's a public figure here, not just musically, just, you know, with the work he put in, you know, organizing as well, which we didn't even touch on here, but he's done so much for the city of Oxnard and for so many different people that even aren't even involved in music. So the city won't be the same without him. Maybe like a year ago when he started hanging around here at the Lockout Studio, like a lot more, we had a conversation about being lifers and how, like, you know, music was his thing. Like, and in some ways, so was mine. You know, we were both in this forever for life. And I think about that often because he always had such kind words to say about, you know, new creative endeavors we've been involved with and everything. I know he dedicated his life's work to, you know, being Cola Boy and making sure that, you know, his community was taken care of. And so we're going to love him and miss him.
Vince, any final things you want to say?
I'd like to say that, there's just so much to say. Oxnard will not be the same. Actually, the world won't be the same without Matt. You know, like the late nights we spent here at the lockout just talking shit won't be the same. There's so much that will be missed without Matt here. And, 2 weeks removed from, you know, him being gone, it's, you know, I'm starting to see more and more of what is missing without Matt here. And I'll see that for the rest of my life. So I really think he touched a lot of people in the scene and in the world. And I see it every day. And I'm going to miss him dearly for the rest of my life. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Ray, final thoughts?
Yeah, just to piggyback what Vince said, the world and especially Oxnard won't be the same. The 2 weeks that Matt has passed, it's visible, the absence without Matt. And it's going to take some time to get used to this next chapter without Matt. And Matt, if you're listening, I love you so much, man. Thank you for everything you did for me and for music. And thank you for being such a good friend to me for over 20 years. And I miss you so much.
Marcus, final thoughts?
Yeah. Just talking to people over these last week and a half, everyone's been really helpful and supportive. And thanks Zach for doing this. Thanks for, doing that Cola Boy episode back then. It was so dope to, a podcast you're listening to when your brother comes up. It's just, it's a lot of fun. And I want to leave people with a lot of stuff I've heard from people that they're now realizing, which is one of Matt's, biggest things, which is just fucking do it. Add the fucking to that Nike logo. And every time, I'm talking with people, they're like, I didn't understand it. He makes it seem so easy when he tells you, dude, just fucking do it. Oh, you're trying to work on a fucking fanzine. Dude, just fucking do it. Oh, you're thinking about starting a project. Just fucking do it. And it now makes so much sense because that's always how he was. He never second guessed himself. He didn't think, can I get there? Will I make it if I walk there? He fucking just went. He just started moving. And I think, I want to hopefully leave people with that, just like Matt fucking would, just fucking do it.
Hello, I'm Tol Juan. Cola will call me TJ. Cola, just wanted to let you know that and remind you that I love you so much, and you will always remain in my heart and thoughts. And I have so many good, funny memories. But I remember the time that we spent Halloween here in Rockaway, and we called Coast to Coast for you to tell them a story, and you were taking forever to tell a story about a ghost in your house. And George Norrie, he cut you short, and he couldn't finish it because it was taking too long. Anyways, I don't want to take too long either. And man, I love you. I love you so much. You know how much I will always tell you that I love you, and I'll miss you. And you will always live in me and in everyone who loves you.
Hi, my name is Ocean Breeze, and I grew up in Oxnard, California, just down the street from Matt and Marcus Urango. I didn't really start going to punk shows until I was 21, but I remember one of the first crazy house shows that I had ever been to was at Veronica Harvey's house when she was throwing this big blowout party where El Mariachi was playing one of their first shows. And there were so many people in that living room where they set up everybody to play that people were spilling out onto the patio and having to watch through the window. And I remember walking through the kitchen and just plates and food and stuff had been thrown all over the place. And then you walked in to see the band, where at one point during the set, somebody actually managed to break through the ceiling. And that was really crazy. I will never forget that. Matt
doing vocals for a power violence band was so freaking brutal. Like, his energy took up the entire room with that. Seeing him play in El Mariachi and FBA was really cool and really special. And it let me know that, like, people could have really big ranges when it came to the music that they were involved in, that they were making. Like, you didn't have to stick to just one thing. I admired Matt for having the range to do both pop music and punk music. I feel like it gave him an advantage when it came to songwriting, to be able to, like, live and work in those, like, extreme creative spaces. Like, they were so different from each other, but, like, punk musicians can learn a lot from pop musicians. I'm going to miss him forever because he was such an integral part of the scene in general. Like, it didn't matter what music I was involved in or the people that I was around, he was pretty much always there. And going to a show in Oxnard is just not going to be the same anymore for me. But I hope that we can carry on his memory and that many more generations to come in Oxnard will know who Matt Urango and Cola Boy was.
This is Eric, a.k.a. Boner, a.k.a. Boner Panties, a.k.a. Bone Jammeramovich, all that fun stuff. I was in Heavy Artillery, Shot in the Face, Covered in Scars, FBA, Trash, Grizzly Shark, and I'm currently in Body Farm out here in Pennsylvania. I grew up in Oxnard and the Wainimi area, and Matt and Marcus are about 5 years younger than me, 6 years younger than me. So, you know, when they were coming to shows when they were 12, 13, 14, they were kind of the new generation of kids coming out. In hindsight, it was, you know, kind of the same generation, just the tail end of it. But they started coming to shows with Adrian and the Sordo kids and all those kids from Central Oxnard area, and just started being at all the shows. And that's really the best way that anybody gets involved in the scene. And they were super involved in the community as well. A couple years later, I can't remember the date exactly, but they started FBA, two-piece band with Matt and Juan. And that was a lot of fun, power violence noise band. And then shortly after that, started another band, El Mariachi, with Nick Ulmer, who was in Heavy Artillery, and Kellen and Raul. And that band was one of my favorite bands ever to come out of Oxnard, power violence band. Shortly after that, they started Sea Lions, which, you know, the whole Yay Records, that indie scene was kind of not really my scene, but it was still the way Oxnard works. Everything's kind of adjacent to itself, and everybody kind of still plays together and parties together and hangs out together, as always. And then, you know, got to watch that band grow into, you know, a really big band that travel all over the place. And then here comes Cola Boy out of nowhere. And that's the biggest thing that, you know, any of us could have imagined. And the whole time, Matt was always staying true to himself, true to Oxnard, true to the community. And that seems to be, you know, a common thing with Oxnard and that whole area, is people really care about where they're from. They care about their community. And you could tell by how much everyone cares for Matt and how, I think, closer this is bringing everybody in remembrance of somebody that was very important to the entire city, to the community, to the scene, to many different scenes, and just how important of a person he was, just as a person.
Hello, everyone listening to the podcast. This is Juan Waters, and to add up to this podcast, I'd like to tell a story about Matthew. I have plenty of stories with him, luckily, because we shared a lot through the years. We had a lot of adventures, a lot of good times, not so good of times, but
it's beautiful to look back and remember everything we've done. A story that really made a mark on me about Matthew's character. At the time I've been friends with Matt for, let's say, 5 years, three, four years I've been friends with Matt. I met Matt when Matt was a teenager, maybe 5 years older than Matt. But I was in my mid-20s, let's say, or I was in my early 20s, and Matt was a teen when I met him. So, as soon as you saw Matt, you could notice that his body was different, right? But his essence, he carried himself in a way that, you know, made you forget that his body was different, right? This was a very, this is something that we experienced, you know, being Matthew's friend, everyone. And one time I remember, it's been 3 years maybe since we've been friends, and we have traveled the world quite a bit, because Matthew was a part of my touring band at some point with my music project. Juan Waters, Matt played guitar and harmonica in my concerts for about a year and a half in 2015-16, and we did it a lot, actually. It was a lot of fun. But one time we were sitting at night after a show in a living room somewhere with the whole traveling band and Matthew and me, and Matthew got serious and said, "Hey guys, I want to tell you something." And we were like, "Yeah, what is it?" And he said, "I want to tell you about my disability, about my body." And he went on to explain that how that he was missing a leg, and that, you know, that he went on to explain that he doesn't tell, at the time, he didn't tell everyone this. Then later on, he became more open about his disability. But it was such a sweet moment, how he communicated this to us and how vulnerable he showed himself in front of us to open up a door about his reality, you know, because like I said, we all knew his body was different, but since he carried himself in such a particular way, it made you forget. But I had been around him a lot, and I had touched him, and I had, I had physical contact with his leg that he was missing, and I had touched his prosthetic leg by accident, let's say. But being around him all the time, that's something that would happen. There's a small physical contact during the day. And when he communicated that to us, it was a beautiful moment how he opened up about that. That's the story I wanted to tell him. I wanted to tell about him. Yes. I will forever remember him and all the things we did. But that particular moment always made me think that he was an OG, as very few people that I've crossed in my life. Maybe the most, the bravest person I met, you know. So shout out to Matt and our friendship.
This is Armand from Night Demon. RIP Cola Boy.
This is David from Tirana. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Yo, what's good? This is Dylan from Your Life in America, KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. Man, we lost a true legend way too soon. Rest in peace, Cola Boy, my brother for life.
This is Christina from Romper. R.I.P. Cola Boy.
Hey, what's up? This is Chris from Dead Heat. Just want to say rest in peace, Matt, a.k.a. the Disabled Disco Innovator, a.k.a. the true mayor of Oxnard, and to the world, Cola Boy. We knew each other since we were kids and saw each other grow up, from doing school talent shows to playing backyard shows together to eventually seeing that fool rock Coachella. He was a big inspiration on me and made a huge impact on our community. He always had a lot to say and would always tell you what's up every time. And he'll be missed by all and we'll always remember it as one of the true gems of Oxnard. So rest in power, Matthew Arango. Love you, brother.
My name is Fernando Hernandez Alaniz. I was in VYO, Marone, and then I also did Stay Cool Fanzine. When I first heard of Matt, or I first kind of met him, it was around 2009, and it was because Mike Doan, shout out to Mike, had told me about like the power violence scene that was happening in Oxnard at the time. And I was kind of between Oxnard and LA, so I was going to, well, I was living in LA, and I was going to more like shows over there, like the whole raw punk scene that was going on. So anyways, I wanted to complete the zine and I wanted to include more Oxnard bands. So I kind of had, I don't think I went to see like FBA or like, you know, other bands like X Malcolm X. So Mike tells me about these bands and he's like, oh, there's like El Mariachi and they're like these like Mexican kids is how he described it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And this is before like all the memes about like homies and power violence, right? So at some point I start going to shows and I'm taking pictures like at Perkins and like El Rio. They were having house shows. And I don't know, like I didn't know that Nick Ulmer was in El Mariachi, right? I don't know, but then I saw that he was in El Mariachi and I was like, oh cool, there's like a connection there, right? So then I see El Mariachi and like Elephant Mace and those two kind of stood out to me at the time. I was like, man, they're like really fierce and like powerful, right? They're just like fast and heavy. And then at some point I connect with Matt and I ask him like, hey dude, is it cool like if I include El Mariachi in my zine? Like I would like to interview you guys. And he was really cool, right? Like everybody said yeah. At that point, like I don't know why Nick wasn't able to go to the interview, but everybody was super cool. And we met at Wins in Oxnard, right there by the lockout right now where everybody practices. And Matt said a lot of badass things in the interview. Like, and after that, you know, we stayed connected. And I'm also going to do like a tribute. I'm going to reprint the interview and like kind of like do like a little zine for like, you know, Cola Boy tribute. And anyways, we stayed connected and I would hang out with them, you know, and Sea Lions, like the Sea Lions El Mariachi crew. And, you know, I was even, you know, they invited me to their house. We hung out a couple times, like Kyle, Adrian, Chris Bayo. And it was really cool, man. Like I felt really welcome and included considering that I was kind of an outsider, right? Like even though everybody ends up being linked, like they didn't really know me, you know? And Matt's place was like a hub, man. That's what I noticed around this time. It's like 2010, 11. And just reminded me of like Robert Martinez's house, you know, when we were younger, when we were kind of in that teenage, early 20s phase. And, you know, they had a lot of bands stay over since then. I remember at the time there was a lot of like San Diego bands that I recall, but probably more bands too. And at some point I kind of stopped going to shows, you know, like it's how it is. And me and Matt would still stay in touch. And Matt, that's when kind of Matt told me like, oh, dude, I'm going to do like a solo project, kind of electro dancey. And he sent me some of the tracks, which was really cool, right? Like, and, you know, the rest is history. We know what ended up happening. But what was still cool to me is that like, even after once Cola Boy like had blown up, right? And like he was big, he would still like get in touch with me and I would see him around. He was always like really friendly and kind. And I just think it's cool, you know, like he even contacted me about some like organizing issue, you know, around like these layoffs that were happening in the Oxnard School District because he was going to like advocate for people with one of his groups. And this is when he was starting to get really involved with activism too. And even dude, up until a few months ago, man, I was mad about some issue. And I texted him and he replied, man, like, I was just like, dude, I was kind of blown away because I was like, dude, like, I was like, who could I hit up that would have like a bigger voice, right? About, well, I forgot what I was texting him about, some issue in the city. And he replied, man, like, that was just really cool, you know? Like, so that's what I take, man. Like, you know, Matt left a lot of like light to shed light into this world that seems very dark. And just the stuff he said in the interview, man, like just like creating and just putting out those things into the world to inspire others. And yeah, man, that's what I take. And so, yeah, thanks guys for doing this, and rest in peace, Cola Boy.
This is Freddie Madball. I want to say rest in peace, Cola Boy. Condolences to his family and friends.
Hey, this is Joe Rivas of Burning Dog and Out of Trust, aka Episode 1. I just wanted to say thank you for all you did, Cola Boy. I'll always remember you as a banana in the pit. And you brought something to the scene that was missing. And I'm grateful for you for that. Hopefully someone else picks that up, but we'll see. Take care up there, buddy.
Hey, this is John C. from Headcut. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
This is John from Find A Way Records. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hey, this is Nick from End Time. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
What's up? This is Martin from Terror, Sound and Fury, etc. Rest in peace to the absolute legend, Cola Boy.
This is Mikey from Omega Point. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
Hey, this is Rob Moran from Unbroken. Rest in peace, Cola Boy. Rest in peace to the jingle jangle behind the sea lions.
Yo, this is Stu from Omega Point. Just want to say rest in peace, Matt Urango.
Hello, it's Cameron from Ventura County, California, and the band In Time. I'm here to, I just want to say rest in peace to Matt, otherwise known as Cola Boy.
Yo, what's up? This is Sam from Drain. Just want to pay my respects. Rest in peace, Cola Boy.
My name is Matthew Volz from Queens, New York. I remember this one time with Cola where he was smoking a cigarette by a car. We're outside of some venue, I forget. And we're watching this guy walking down the street. And he's stumbling, he's falling on the floor, you know, it's like a block away, he's walking towards us. And, you know, it's obviously like wasted. He walks right towards us, Mexican guy, and he walks up to Cola, like stumbles up to him. And it's just like, I know you, man. I know you. And we're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And he goes, El Mariachi, man. El Mariachi. And Cola just starts laughing. He starts hugging Cola. And it was just such a beautiful interaction. And I was just like, that's so fucking random. And, it was cool, man. Like, Cola truly was a man of the people. And like, that's the people who fucked with him. You know what I mean? It was everybody, you know, everyone loved Cola. And the thing about Cola is like, everybody gravitated towards him. He's just a cool person, you know, and such a sweet person. And if you look at all the music he's made and the people he's collaborated with MGMT, with the guy from Air, Avalanches, you know, all these people, it's not some marketing team that got together. They gravitated towards him. You know what I mean? It's like they felt, they recognized real. That's Cola. He's the realest player in a game, you know. He's one of a kind. When Matt was first putting out his demos and stuff, it was under the name Vox Disco, and me, Juan Waters, Tall Juan, we were all like, yo, Vox Disco, that sounds whack. Like, we would all call him Cola Boy, so it's like, yo, just go by Cola Boy, that sounds dope. But he was hesitant, so I made a flyer, and instead of putting Vox Disco, I put Cola Boy. And I was like, you know, trying to push him into the Cola Boy. Then after that, Tol Juan had done an interview for some magazine or some online music magazine or some shit. And they asked him, hey, can you send a video of a band that you or artist that you like? So that night, like in a few hours, I took the Penny Girl song, which was like a demo, and I put the Pee-wee's Playhouse Penny, the Penny cartoon, you know, the claymation, and like made a video out of that and uploaded it onto YouTube. We sent it to the magazine, and it's like, yo, now you're in a magazine. They say in Cola Boy, there's a video that says Cola Boy with your song. It's like, that's a wrap, man. You're Cola Boy. I always admired how Cola lived his life. He was born with disabilities, and he always looked out for other people who were disabled and had even anyone who was kind of an underdog or overlooked or whatever it is, like people are getting, aren't getting paid enough. People, he just always looking out for people like that, which was so, so cool, man. And he lived his life on his own terms, man. He's done more with his life than most people I know. I mean, maybe the most. He's organizing protests. He's playing shows. He's collaborating with people. He's doing artwork. He's traveling, touring. I mean, this guy was so productive, man. You know, like even the demos and all this shit, it was just like constant, like the stream of creativity coming out of him. And it was just a beautiful thing to like to be his friend and to be able to witness and just listen to the stuff he's making and doing and just like just a positive force in the world. Cola for me is such a dear friend, and he's like a brother to me. You know, we would talk for hours on the phone. We would, you know, I was always so proud of him. And you know what? Like I told him that all the time. You know, I was like, yo, when he would send me demos and send me stuff, and I'd just be like, yo, this shit is so good. Like you're the shit. Like I'm not sucking his dick or nothing, but I'm being honest. You know, like. He knows that I like what he's doing, and he was always bigging me up and just fucking, I don't know. We just had each other's backs, man. And like, we had that connection. I'm Matthew Joseph Vold. He's Matthew Joseph Yarango. You know, that's we're brothers from another mother, man. And like, it's past 2 weeks. It's been fucking painful because so many times I just want to pick up the phone and call him and it sucks. It sucks not being able to do that anymore. But man, I'm just so grateful for every moment we got to spend with each other. And you know, I'm so thankful to have been his friend. That's a privilege.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Rest in peace.
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 But I thought writing a pop song, that's magic. I thought at one point, like, I can never do that. You know, like this person, you know, has the magic touch. Like, there's no way I could ever do that. And at some point I just said, you know, fuck it. I'm just going to try.